Welcome to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. My guest on today's podcast is my friend Jillian Adams. Welcome, Jillian.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here.
We're glad you're here. Just a little bit of background on Jillian, so you know, an introduction for the podcast. Jillian is 26. She is gay. She's in a same-sex marriage. Her wife's name is Cassidy. They've been married for about 2 years. Jillian will talk about her story as a gay Latter-day Saint growing up and coming to terms with her sexual orientation, and talk about how their LDS family continues to keep the family circle together, even though Jillian's not living a life within the doctrine of the LDS Church. Some people would say, well, why are you doing a podcast with someone that's left the church? Because my podcast is trying to be church supportive. And that's a fair question. I don't invite, and I don't think Jillian does either, we're not inviting anybody to leave. And I would invite everybody to stay, but I think it's okay to hear everybody's story. I don't like to bring people on the podcast that are, you know, against the church and want the church to bring down. Jillian, before we started, talked about how she's respectful of her LDS friends and honors them as they continue to stay in the church. And I think just kind of wants permission to live her life the best way that she can. So I'm try to humanize people that need, I think, humanizing. And so I think hearing Jillian's story helps humanize our members that have stepped away and can still see they're good as the same members of God's family. And Jillian, we're going to let you do all the talking in a second, but just as a further way of introduction, I like Elder Gay's talk from October of 2018, and there's some quotes he shared in this talk. And as we think about this podcast with Jillian, this is how I hope we see Jillian. Joseph Smith said, while one portion of the human race is judging and condemning the other without mercy, the great parent of the universe looks upon the whole of the human family with fatherly care and parental regard, for his love is unfathomable. And then Elder Gay talks about giving a blessing to his sister that was never really active in the church. And it was, he says, quote here, as I placed my hands on her head that evening, I received a severe rebuke from the Spirit and was made acutely aware of her goodness and allowed to see her as God saw her, not as someone who struggled with the gospel in life, but as someone who had to deal with difficult issues I did not have. I saw her, then he wanted to talk about her life. Then he quotes another thing. You know, during his talk, he said, during that final evening with my sister, I believe God was asking me, can you see everyone around you as a sacred being? So I love some of the things that Elder Gay taught in his talk. And then he goes on to say, I wish to urge upon the saints to understand men and women as they are and not understand them as you are. So that's just some introduction thoughts to try to create space for all of us within the human family. And just to recap, I'm not inviting anybody to go down Jillian's path. I invite everybody actually to stay in our church. But I recognize that there are people of God's children that are outside of our church, and I think it's okay to hear their stories. And that's what we're doing today with Jillian. So that's a long introduction, Jillian. Are you okay with all that?
Yeah, of course. That was a beautiful talk. I hadn't heard that one, for obvious reasons. But I really appreciate you reading that first.
So tell us when you became aware of your sexual orientation. And then as part of that, tell us if you take on the label gay or lesbian.
So I first became aware of it in college. And, you know, that's to say I actually had a name for the face, so to speak. You know, looking back on my life, you know, this has been something that I've had, you know, that has been a part of me my entire life. But in college, I fell in love with my best friend at the time. That was a unique experience, simply because I was a bridesmaid at her wedding. And it was her getting married to someone else that sort of made me realize, you know, something is different here. Something is you know, not as it should be between two friends, just because I was so hurt and so angry. And it wasn't even like, you know, you're marrying a bad person. You know, I loved her fiance. He was an amazing man and, you know, truly like one of the kindest people I've ever met. And so for me to feel so upset about it was, you know, made me take pause and sort of step away from it and be like, what does that mean? You know, because she's my best friend, she's getting married, I should be over the moon for her that she's found such an amazing person to spend the rest of her life and eternity with. And so I did just kind of have to, you know, have a moment where I was like honest with myself and was like, this means not that I only love her, but that I am in love with her. And so that means that, well, I must be gay.
How old were you?
I was
Jillian.
18. I want to say 18, 19. Yeah. Yeah, my freshman year of college. And so that was the catalyst for realizing it. And then looking back all across my life, being like, oh, this is why I felt this way about, you know, all these friends that I had in high school, all these, you know, this desire to be close to these female friends that I had and but also at the same time also feeling very much an outsider for reasons unknown. You know, I couldn't identify why I felt so by myself in a big part of my life. So that was the beginning of knowing that I was gay. And at the time, you know, I've never really used the term same-sex attracted. I think that sounds a little clinical. So I sort of just go back and forth between gay and lesbian, and I've found that I've sort of been conditioned to think that lesbian is sort of a dirty word. So I think that I use gay more frequently, but I still identify as a lesbian myself.
And thanks for just sharing some of your story. That kind of takes courage just to let our listeners know you fell in love with somebody.
Yeah.
And she was getting married to a man and you probably couldn't tell anybody about this.
Right.
And, you're sort of having to deal with all these feelings and it probably in a very closeted way where you weren't, did you talk to anybody?
I did talk to a counselor. I was at BYU at the time. So I went through their free counseling program. And I actually don't know how I heard about that, but for anybody listening who goes to BYU, there is a free counseling program. And you can tell them anything.
Good.
I talked to him about being gay and he was not judgmental in the slightest. He was
good.
Extremely sympathetic, very, very kind about it. And it was helpful to have someone to talk to at that time because I wasn't sure who I was going to tell. You know, I certainly didn't want to tell any of my friends who were also attending BYU. And I didn't know when or if to tell my family. So at the time he was like the only person who knew.
How many times did
you
meet with this counselor?
I'm trying to think of when I started going. I want to say 7 to 10 times.
Good.
Sounds about right. Yeah. Just because it was over the span of several months.
Did it help you just to be able to talk to somebody about what was really going on in your life?
Yeah, it did. It did help to be able to speak that truth in a place where I felt safe. You know, because beforehand he, you know, when you first, sign up to meet with a counselor, you put down the reason that you're there, and it never actually occurred to me really to not be honest about the reason that I was there. And so I just wrote it down in a little questionnaire and sent it in, and he thought that my frankness was amusing. You know, he thought that it was interesting that I was so forthright that, you know, I'm here because I'm a homosexual and I want to talk about that, you know. And
good for you.
Yeah. So that was I can't remember what my original thought was, but.
And tell us about your family. Did you grow up in an active LDS family?
Yes. Born and raised. And my parents had been members their whole lives as well. I think that their parents or their grandparents were converts, so, you know, it goes back quite a ways, the church membership. And yeah, born and raised that way. And, you know, obviously went to BYU, you know, had a very strong testimony through, you know, most of my life to date. And yeah, that's, you know, because of that, it was a, you know, a pretty painful journey to get to the point where I felt that the next best step for me would be to leave the church.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very difficult decision for me to come to. It was a hard thing to realize that the best thing for me in my life personally would be to step away from the church. Thankfully my family has been amazing about it, you know, very loving and supportive and accepting, you know, obviously still devout in their beliefs, but you know, of the mindset that if I'm happy and living my best life, then they're happy for me. And, you know, we can live our lives in different ways and still be, you know, part of each other's lives. And yeah, I've been really, really lucky in that way.
Talk about suicide. Were you suicidal during your teenage years? And are you suicidal now? Or are you in a better spot?
I'm not suicidal now. I wasn't ever suicidal in my teenage years. I think not knowing that I was gay until I went to college was helpful. I think that it would have been a lot to deal with in high school. And so I'm grateful that I didn't come to the realization until college years. And in college, once I had that realization, I wouldn't say that I was ever actively suicidal. You know, I never had a suicide plan. I never had, you know, these ideations of like, oh, it would be, you know, so great to do such and such and just end it all. But I did have the idea that it would just be a lot easier to not have to suffer through this life this way. So definitely the idea that not being alive would be a lot easier than being alive in a situation like that.
Did you ever think you were a liability to your family and your family would be better off without you because you're kind of messing up the eternal plan?
I don't know that thought ever crossed my mind.
Good.
I don't think so.
And so for our listeners out there, if that thought hasn't crossed your mind either, don't think that thought. And if it has crossed your mind, don't believe it. You know, everybody would be heartbroken if you left.
Yeah.
So don't go down that road and think that thought, because your family members would be heartbroken and you're left. And it sounds like you were able to navigate not going down that road.
Yeah. Yeah. It was at the time, it's interesting to look back on it now, but at the time it was my testimony that kept me going through it. You know, I was sort of in that headspace of, you know, this is a trial that God has given me and I was strong enough to deal with it. Obviously I'm in a different mind space than that now. I don't in any way, shape or form believe that being gay is a trial. And I think that, you know, I am grateful for the belief system that I had at the time to get me through that point, to get me through that struggle and that worry and wondering about, you know, can I actually do this? Can I make it through this?
Do you remember anything, one or two things that were helpful from that BYU counselor? Or is that just kind of a fog?
It's kind of a fog. It really is. There was a lot going on emotionally. And I just remember, you know, I do remember that the first thing he said to me was, I want you to know that this is not a mistake, that this isn't one of those things where, you know, this couldn't possibly be something that you're experiencing because, you know, God doesn't make mistake, quote unquote. And he just let me know that it was okay for me to say that I'm gay, because if that's what I am, then it's okay to own that. And I didn't have to justify it or be like, you know, this is just a trial or anything like that. He always encouraged me to believe that, you know, that this is a part of who I am and that that's okay for me to accept.
Did that surprise you?
It did a little bit. Yeah. I think, because I hadn't, you know, at that point, you know, I sort of realized that I was gay and then sort of put thinking about it on hold until I went to counseling. And so I wasn't really sure what to expect from it. So, yeah. So for him to say that, for that to be the first thing, the very first thing that he said, I think was, you know, definitely a pleasant surprise.
Do you believe that?
Do I believe that? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely think that, you know, that being gay is intrinsically a part of who I am. I don't think that I would be who I am without it. And I think that, you know, that goes for anybody's sexuality. You know, it's not talked about with straight people because that's the norm and being straight is just how it is. But I think any straight person would agree that if they were any other sexuality, they would be a different person. They wouldn't be the person that they know themselves to be currently.
Talk about sexual fluidity. I think I finally said that right. And I pick up sometimes, I don't know if the science backs this up or just sort of things I picked up, that sexual fluidity is maybe higher for women than men. And so instead of me speaking to that, we should have you speak to that.
Right. I don't know that that's necessarily true. I think, and this is a whole topic that, you know, I think more than myself would need to comment on to really get to the bottom of it. But from my experience and from what I've heard and seen and learned within the LGBT community, it seems that sexual fluidity is more prevalent amongst women because it's more acceptable. I think women are allowed to be more affectionate with each other, just even platonically. And so I think that sort of translates over to them being allowed to explore sexuality without a lot of repercussions. Whereas if a man were to, you know, experiment with a man, people would automatically be like, oh, you're gay. And so I think that definitely precludes men from ever exploring any kind of sexual fluidity they think they might have unless they know for sure, like, I am just gay. I think that bisexual people are cut out of the mix a lot in that circumstance because they're ruled out once they're in, you know, a relationship, whether it be a hetero relationship or a gay relationship. People tend to put them into that box, whether or not that's the case for them.
Do you feel like there's any fluidity for you, Jillian, or do you feel like not?
No, I don't think that there is. I definitely consider myself to be, you know, a tried and true lesbian. I can definitely find men attractive, you know, the same way that gay men can acknowledge that when a woman is attractive, you know, they can see that. But I don't think that in any way indicates any sort of fluidity on my part. I wouldn't be able to find a connection with a man the way that I could with a woman. And that is not for lack of trying. I can tell you, I've been on many, many dates with men and the chemistry is just not there. So yeah, I would definitely say him.
Did your friend who got married, did you have any connection with her?
Yes. Oh yes.
And is she aware of?
She is aware. We're actually not friends anymore.
That's okay.
Yeah, it was a difficult circumstance. I was, you know, obviously very drawn to her. She's a beautiful woman, and I, you know, got very close to her in a friendship. And you know, for her it was just a friendship, and for me it was obviously a lot more than that. Whether, you know, even though I didn't know it at the time, but yeah, there was for me that spark and that chemistry of just, I just want to spend all of my time with you. And I don't really care about spending time with anybody but you. And so I think that a lot of people would recognize that as romantic feelings, you know, when you really don't want to be with anybody but that person, you know, that's a romantic attraction. So for me, that was there. And I think for her, she just thought that we were really good friends.
That's so honest. It takes courage just to talk about that. There potentially is a lot of shame in just these feelings. And I think listeners I've heard so many stories of someone sort of falling in love with a straight person. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and neither of them, the straight person, is unaware of what's really going on.
Right.
And it's a shameful situation for the non-straight person. How did you navigate the shame and just feel okay about this and move forward?
I mean, for a while, you know, there was a lot of emotions going on. You know, there was kind of an embarrassment of, you know, I'm so dedicated to you and to this relationship, and you're not, you know, like
that could lead to anger and frustration,
which it absolutely did. You know, there was that anger of, you know, first before I realized that I was gay, the anger of how can you just like go and spend time with this guy, you know, when we've, you know, I'm the person that you spend all of your time with, you know, we share everything, including almost all of our time together. And, you know, how can you just like turn around and give this to someone else? You know, cause it was very precious to me. It was very sacred to me. Cause I was in love with her and I was giving her my time, like as a token of my affection. And the anger came without me really realizing what it was at first. And then after realizing that it was romantic affection that I was feeling, it was like, okay, I'm angry because, you know, I feel that I have given you all of this and all of myself, and you just turned around and gave all of that you had to some guy who just, you know, showed up. I'm so sorry. What was the original question?
No, you've answered the question.
Okay, yeah.
One of the things that comes to my mind is to learn to justify anger. Mm-hmm. I think it's a secondary emotion to
it
pain.
Is. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think where agency comes in is what you do with anger.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get over the anger? If our listeners are, for whatever reason, they have anger.
It took me a really long time. I'll be honest about that. It wasn't the most graceful process for me.
Okay.
So the sequence of events was, she got married, at the end of 2011. And then in January of 2012, I went to basic training, for the military. And
that's cool.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for your service. I think you've spent 7 years or 6 years.
Yeah, 6 years
in the military, in the army.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So I went to basic training, and this was before telling her about my feelings or anything, and still feeling really weird and really hurt about it. But just trying to, you know, play it cool. And she was in the newlywed stage, so, you know, she didn't pick up on anything. So I went to basic training and just, you know, had 6 months to just not worry about it. Had a lot of other things to focus on. And then when I came back, she and I were actually in the same unit because she had gone through the ROTC program. And when I came back, I was giving her the cold shoulder, and I didn't want to talk to her when, you know, we were doing, you know, exercises on the weekends together. And she noticed and called me out. And so I was like, okay, well, you know, I need to talk to you then. And I need to talk to you privately, because this is something that obviously, you know, I can't keep under wraps anymore. Not that I was doing a good job of it to begin with. But yeah, so one day I just went to her house and just let her know I'm gay and I was in love with you. And she said, that's okay. You know, and I'm sure that it wasn't meant in any sort of malicious way, but for me, it was like she was accepting an apology, which was not what I was giving her. I was not giving her an apology. It wasn't apologizing for being gay or for being in love with her. I was just telling her that to say the friendship that we had was a lot more for me than just a friendship, even though I didn't know it at the time. And, you know, so when she said that's okay, and I was like, no, you don't understand. I was in love with you and now you're married to someone else. And I don't think I can just, you know, shrug it off and move on and still be really close to you while you have, you know, this marriage and build a family with someone who isn't me. And so, you know, I don't think she really understood that. I think she was hurt by it, which I totally understand, because it was sort of, you know, out of the blue for her. And so from that point on, I didn't really see her much or talk to her, and she moved away shortly after that, and I haven't really been in touch with her ever since. So I had a lot of anger about that for a really long time, for several years, which I don't recommend. It's not a pleasant experience. I think that it was okay for me to be hurt by what happened. And, you know, honestly, I think wounds like that sort of just need that time to heal. But I think that I did keep revisiting what had happened between me and her, and attributing a lot of my, you know, pain to that incident, that specific incident. And I think that I could have let it go and just sort of tried to heal and move on a lot sooner than I did, which I think, you know, being the person that I am now in a situation like that, I think I would have been able to. But, you know, it is what it is. And it was a learning experience and a growing experience, if nothing else.
The thought came to mind as you're sharing with our listeners, Jillian, this experience is you have a lot of empathy for this former friend of yours. And it generated a lot of anger. It's sort of like a paradox that yeah. both of the, you recognize that she was, I think you said, out of the blue and maybe not prepared to know what to say.
Right.
And you wish she had said, you know, different things than she said mm-hmm. and fully realized what this relationship meant to you.
Right.
And the grief you were going through. But you had some sort of empathy that it was hard for her to do that, but it didn't. But then generated logically a lot of anger.
Right.
Because of just the pain of this situation, that the hopes and dreams and the reality was just not attainable.
Yeah.
And so I just appreciate you sharing that. I don't know what I would invite our listeners, what you can learn from that. I don't, you know, I think it's just important to hear people's stories. And if we're in these situations, we're unaware that a situation that we're potentially involved in that has caused pain in others, that we're completely unaware of that and maybe not at fault. And we become aware of that to try to, I think our natural defenses is to not honor someone else's feelings
right.
or to minimize their feelings. But I guess the thing I would try to do, and I'm not sure I could do this, is just to try to listen and truly understand. I've been caught off guard a few times when someone has opened up to me about like a work situation or a mm-hmm. relationship situation at work. I can remember a few where I was just kind of stunned right. that what I had done, maybe innocently, it actually caused so much pain. Maybe I blocked these out of my mind because I can't remember them, but I just know they've happened, Jillian.
Right.
And so I think there's learning in that experience.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's practical that you would stay friends. Sometimes I think relationships that have changed and people have moved on, it's almost more painful to stay friends. I'm not sure there's always a way to do that because it kind of re-traumatizes. I don't know if that's the right term.
Mm.
Do you think you could have stayed friends, or do you think it was just better for both of you to move on, even though that probably generated anger?
I think it was best that we did move on. I think that a lot of our friendship was founded upon me being, you know, to quote Grease, hopelessly devoted to this woman, and giving her a lot more affection and, you know, really sacrificing a lot of my time when she didn't return. That sacrifice. It definitely was an unbalanced relationship. And so I think that, you know, I don't think that it feasibly could have continued that way, you know, for, you know, obvious reasons. You know, if I had just pulled myself away from the romantic aspect, I think that I wouldn't have been the same friend to her as she would have expected me to be. And I think that I wasn't my best self when I was around her because I was so focused upon, you know, making sure that she had everything that she needed, you know, at my own expense.
Would your older self go back and tell your younger self, if your older self could talk to your younger self in this relationship, what would you tell yourself?
Oh, gosh.
If that question made sense, Jillian.
No, it does. I don't know. You know, the nature of the situation was that I had to learn what I learned the exact way that I learned it.
Maybe that's a good answer.
And I don't think anything anybody would have said would have changed that. You know, I think
that's probably a really good answer.
Yeah.
Because then you're looking at your answer is all positive then, in mm-hmm. the sense that maybe there wasn't anything that my older self would tell me except that this is going to be a good experience for you. Painful,
mm-hmm.
but a part of your beautiful life journey.
Yeah. Yeah,
I've heard a few stories of, you know, college age men and women that have close interaction that have one straight, one's not straight, and the straight one not picking up. And so if that's part of your journey, and you're not straight and have kind of fallen in love with a straight person that's under the umbrella of a friendship, I'm not going to give you any specific advice, but I think it's good to sort of be aware of what's really going on in the relationship and talk to God and ask God what you should be doing in that relationship. I've heard some of the most difficult, potentially suicide situations from a couple have opened up to me how difficult it is to be in love with someone who considers it a friendship and not being able to share that paradox with anybody and how difficult that is emotionally. So if you're in that kind of a box, you've got to do what Jillian did. You've got to find someone to talk to.
Yeah. And I would add to that, to take care of yourself first. Always give yourself your most energy. You know, don't ever give anybody else more energy than you give to yourself, because you are the most important person. And at the end of the day, you know, it's going to be you that you have to live with your entire life. And so you should treat yourself, you know, as your eternal companion, because that's exactly who you are. And you deserve all of the love that you can muster, you know, more than anyone else does. And that's, I think, if I were to go back, that's what I would tell myself.
That's great. Even though you've stepped away from the church, are there still doctrines or parts of the church that you really love?
Yeah.
Share with our listeners any of that.
I mean, I believe in the concept of eternal happiness. I believe in a plan of happiness. You know, obviously I fall outside of the jurisdiction of the plan of happiness as it is you know, taught within the church, but I do believe that there is a plan of happiness for everybody. I think, you know, no matter who you are, no matter where you are in your life, I think that, you know, happiness is the point. Happiness and joy, you know, men are that they might have joy. I've always believed in that. And I think that that is the point of being here, is for us to find our happiness. And, you know, I absolutely respect, you know, and love the people who find their happiness within the church. You know, my in-laws are some of those people. They, you know, absolutely just rejoice in following the gospel and partaking and participating in the church. And I think that that's, you know, if that is for you, that is absolutely wonderful. And I think that that is something you should, you know, pursue. I think at the end of the day that your own personal happiness is what matters the most.
It's very kind. And I guess, you know, you've just extended this kindness to people in the church, mm-hmm. and recognize that is bringing them great happiness. And you recognize that. And I guess I hope, you know, I and others extend the same courtesy to you and just see you as a fellow human trying to do the best you can in your life and have a partner, a wife, and sort of not demonize you or not put world problems at your feet, and try to see, you know, your service in the military and the other things you're accomplishing, and just live this commandment, you know, to love thy neighbor as thyself. Yeah. And for a lot of LDS people, including me, it's a harder space,
right?
You know, and sometimes it's easier for me to love people that have never been involved in our church, and but people that have stepped away and people that have stepped away into a same-sex marriage, mm-hmm. that for some reason is a harder thing to do.
Right.
So that's, I think this is maybe a good podcast for all of us to know how to navigate this space.
Yeah.
Talk about, this is a tangent. Tell us mm-hmm. about the military. Did you love your time in the military?
My time in the military was a mixed bag. I think I wouldn't trade it for anything. But given the chance to do it again, I don't know that I would take that chance. It was, you know, again, part of my journey. I think it was definitely not a mistake for me to join the military. I think it was really important and an integral part of me growing up, and learning more about myself, especially that basic training portion of it, just because it was so mentally and physically taxing, that, you know, coming out successful on the other side was, you know, it was definitely a trial by fire. But yeah, it was a good part of my life. I really appreciate that I get to say, you know, that I did serve and I did everything to qualify to do so. And
what would be one or two things you took with you from the military that you learned that are foundation principles for the rest of your life?
That I can do absolutely anything I set my mind to, and so can everyone else.
That's cool.
Yeah. I think people that, you know, that I met in basic training who I wouldn't have expected to finish, who did, you know, it just goes to show that, you know, the power of the human spirit, if you want something bad enough, you'll get it. Just as a anecdote, I actually broke my back while I was in training.
Wow.
I went to airborne school, which is just where they teach you to jump out of airplanes. And that was 3 weeks. And I broke my back on the first jump that I did.
Wow.
Which I didn't actually realize. I didn't realize it was broken. I just knew that I was in a lot of pain.
And was that the chute deploying or landing?
It was the landing. I was about 10 or 20 feet off the ground. And I think I just must have hit a cold pocket of air because my chute just like collapsed a little bit. And so I just like landed standing up. So to corneal in my spine and created a compound or a compression fracture or another. And I didn't realize that had happened. So I went back and did another jump that same day and then did three more, to graduate. And I didn't understand why it hurt so much, you know, why my harness was making everything hurt so much more than it did before. But I went home and went to the chiropractor and they did x-rays on me because it had been a while since I went in. And they're like, yeah, you have a compression fracture in your spine. And I was like, oh, that's why that hurts that so happened. Much. Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. But
have you healed from that?
It's been kind of weird, a weird healing process just because, you know, you can't splint it and you can't really do surgery to fix it. You know, once it's healed that way, it's healed that way. And I, you know, some people suggested fusing vertebrae, but that just seemed like a really poor choice just because of the complications that can come out of it. So it is broken to this day. It's still in its compressed state. And, you know, it's just been kind of one of those things that I've had to learn to live with. It doesn't bother me too much anymore. So I can gratefully it's been, you know, feeling much better than it did when initially it was broken.
Sometimes I pick up on stereotypes, like there's more gay or lesbian women in certain areas in our society. Maybe the military, is that a stereotype that you've heard before?
Oh yeah. For
and
sure.
What would you say to someone that said, well, you know, these blanket statements?
I would say that if you think there's a lot of gay women in the military, I would love for you to show me where they are because I met maybe three women who were gay in the grand total of my military experience, and most of them were in basic training. So that was, you know, from like all walks of life, people coming from all over. And yeah, they were not very frequent in my experience. And I would just say, you know, anybody can join the military and you don't have to be a butch or a, you know, like tough woman or lesbian to make it in the military.
Yeah, that's my feeling too.
Yeah.
Is that some of these stereotypes just aren't true.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met LGBTQ people in every single profession. With all sorts of different Christ-like attributes and dispositions and skills and gifts. And so that's certainly something that I've learning. Did you feel like you could be celibate your whole life? Because now that you're identifying as gay, you've got three roads, I guess, a mixed orientation marriage,
mm-hmm.
no marriage, and just I'll be celibate, or a same-sex marriage.
That's an interesting question. That was a whole journey for me to figure out which one of those was going to be my path. For a long time, you know, I gratefully never burdened myself with the idea that I would ever be not gay. I never believed that it was something that God could take away from me. And I really, you know, even in the worst of times, I didn't want it taken away. But I did believe that if I was righteous enough, that I would find a man who I could fall in love with and marry. And, you know, that he would know that I was gay, you know, there would be no secrets, but, you know, we would have a happy and healthy marriage. And, you know, I, like I said before, I gave it my best shot. You know, I was dating men at BYU. I was dating men when I wasn't at BYU. You know, I put in my time to try and find someone who I could really click with and feel safe and comfortable with. And for a long time, you know, for several years, I did believe that, you know, I could make it work. But, you know, there was always that feeling that, you know, it just kind of sucks that that's my option. You know, I can marry somebody who I have to, you know, search far and wide to maybe find somebody that I have a connection to who is a man, or I have to be celibate. You know, that's an awfully lonely perspective. And something that I will say about that is that I don't think that people who are not facing that predicament could really ever understand what it means to be told that it's good and right for me to be lonely my whole life. You know, that could be what God would want for me, because I think that that's a very harmful message for people to pass along and for people to reinforce, that, you know, this great joy that, you know, so many people get to take part of, you know, that straight people get to take part of within the church, you know, that is held up as, you know, the pinnacle of human experience, is going to be taken away from you because you're gay.
And I reread Elder Gay's words as you're talking about this, and this is what I think, it just creates empathy to hear your story, Jillian, but and he's speaking of his sister, I was made acutely aware of her goodness and allowed to see her as God saw her, not as someone who struggled with the gospel in life, but as someone who had to deal with difficult issues I did not have. And so I love the wording of that and what you just said, that, and I don't even want to call this a struggle or difficult issues, because I think you're correctly communicating that you being gay is not a burden or not a mistake that needs to be fixed.
Right.
And I'm very comfortable with that. But I love just what Elder Gay says, is that, you know, you're right. When I was at BYU, I had an authorized path, you know?
Right.
And I have wonderful memories of those years at BYU. And I had an authorized path and found my wife there. And we moved on with our life and being married, and has unlocked our lives together.
Right.
And I can't imagine being alone. So I don't know your road.
Mm.
But I think I've certainly tried to develop empathy for how difficult that road is to stay as a celibate person.
Right.
And many are doing that. I think, you know, we both invite them, if they're able to do that, to continue to do that, and give them our credit and support. But so it sounds like you just came to the realization that wasn't going to be your path.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an interesting and very convoluted road, because at the time that I was of the belief that I would find a man to marry, I did get involved with another girl, with one of my roommates while I was at BYU. And that's a whole other can of worms that we could open. But there was a lot of shame and guilt at that time. A lot of, you know, me believing and feeling very deeply that what I was doing was wrong. And that is, you know, if I could just stop doing it, then I would find the man I was supposed to marry. You know, and it was a lot of on and off, and I was dating men, you know, in the midst of everything going on. But it was a very difficult road that I created for myself, just because she and I, you know, were both believing, practicing Mormons, and you know, we both knew that if we could just get unentangled from each other, that we would be living happier, better lives. And I think at the time that did stem from some internalized homophobia, and believing that being in a gay relationship was wrong. And so that was a whole strange and complicated road. But I knew that at the end of it, you know, even when I was in the middle of all of it, I still had that belief that at the end of it, once it was over, once I could get myself out of the situation that I had gotten into, that I would either have to be celibate or marry a man. And, you know, at the time, none of the options that I had or that I was currently making were bringing me any kind of fulfillment or joy.
And did you finish at BYU or did you leave BYU?
I left BYU just to join the military.
To join the military.
Yeah. So I was there for 2 or 3 years, I want to say, and then dropped out to join the military and just sort of never ended up going back. Yeah. So, yeah.
I assume there's some dissonance there with, you know, wanting to be true to BYU and what you're doing there. And
yeah. Yeah. That was a complicated thing. I did tell my bishop about what was going on with myself and my roommate.
Good.
And I was put on probation for a year. So there was a year there that I wasn't going
academic
to
probation or church probation or both.
Academic probation. My ecclesiastical endorsement was suspended for that time.
I admire you talking to your bishop. That's really complicated if you're a BYU student.
And yeah.
You seem to have integrity here, even though, you know, at the time you're at BYU and it sounds like there's some inappropriate behavior going on, you have the integrity to talk to your bishop about that.
Right, and that was something that
sort of face up to consequences.
Me.
So yeah. That's a sign of strength. I admire you for doing that.
Thank you.
Talk about you're married to Cassidy and you've been married about 2 years and you've known each other for about 3 years.
Yeah.
Talk about talk about the relationship with your parents as it became clear that you weren't going to marry a man and you weren't going to stay celibate, but it became at some point, I guess your parents realized that our daughter is going to marry a woman.
Yeah. So that was actually a very deliberate conversation that I had with them, because meeting Cassidy was sort of in the midst of when I was still on again, off again with my former girlfriend. And I met Cassidy and we were just friends for a long time. And she sort of helped me unembroil myself with this, you know, toxic relationship that I had going on. So we were just friends for a while. And then I felt myself repeating that familiar pattern of falling in love with, you know, my best friend. And the difference there was that she was also falling in love with me. And we were honest with each other about our feelings, but I told her, I was like, I know that you met me when I was in a relationship with a woman, but like, I need you to know that like, that can't be the case with us, you know, because I believe in the church and I want to get married in the temple and I, you know, want to follow this path that has been laid out before me. And, you know, and she was sort of the same mind and was like, yeah, you know, I also believe in the church. And so that makes sense. And, you know, through a very interesting series of events that I don't know that we have time to go into at the moment, but we sort of, you know, came to the conclusion, or rather I came to the conclusion, I took much longer than she did to come to it, but that I did want to be with her. And so we kind of just made the decision to push forward in a relationship. And so I was really nervous to tell my family. I refer to this as coming out a second time because they already knew that I was gay. I had come out to them years before. But at the time I had told them, you know, I'm either going to be celibate or I'm going to find a man to marry. So, you know, telling them that actually I'm going to be with and marry this woman felt like a much bigger coming out than the first one. And so I told my siblings first, went up to my sister's house in Idaho and it was over a holiday weekend or something like that because we were all there. And I sat them all down and I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And Cassidy and I are going to be together. And I just wanted to let you know, because I know that I told you before this that that wasn't going to be the case, but now it is. And I just, you know, just sort of laid it all out there. And they're like, well, it's about time you told us, because, you know, they're like, we know that you and Cassidy are very close, and that it had seemed like, you know, like, you know, the chemistry was there. And so we were kind of just waiting for the announcement. And so they were just like, you know, if you're happy, we're happy. And so that was good. And then, you know, I told my mom, you know, just gave her a call, and she was very supportive. You know, we had a talk about just a lot of things, but the conclusion of it was just that, you know, she trusted me to know myself and to know what was what I wanted to do, and that she was happy for us. And then I told my dad, which was the harder of the conversations, because he's very very devout, you know, practicing, believing member of the church. You know, I just knew that it would be a little bit harder for him to hear. So I just gave him a call, and I kind of just like spilled it all out there, you know, just, you know, sort of just word vomited and rambled on a little bit. And then after all of it, I just said, you don't have to respond right now. You don't have to talk to me about this right now. I want you to take your time. You can think about it. You can process.
It's a great thing to say.
Yeah. Because
instead of saying, what do you think? Because it gives them time to process. It's
right.
Very thoughtful, Julian.
Yeah. That, and I just felt like, you know, my dad's the kind of person who likes to ponder. He likes to ponder and think about things. And so I just wanted to give him that space. And so I just said that outright. I was like, you don't need to respond to this right now. You know, you can take however much time you need. You have the information. And he was like, okay, how is the work going? And I was like, it's good. And he's like, okay, well, I'll talk to you later. And I was like, okay. And about 2 weeks later, he called me and he told me that, you know, he hadn't really thought about having a gay daughter because he, you know, because when I had come out to him, it had been, you know, the coming out had been, you know, intermingled with, but don't worry, I'm still in the church. I'm still, you know, practicing, and I'm going to marry a man and it's going to be fine. And so he hadn't really thought about it before. And he was like, you know, I've been doing some research and I've, you know, been looking up stuff about, you know, Elder Christofferson's brother and, you know, just like, you know, getting informed and all this stuff. And at the end of it, he was just like, you know, I really appreciate you giving me the time to think about it because I needed that time. But, you know, if you are my daughter and you will always be my daughter, and that comes first and foremost. And if you are happy, then I'm happy with your choices. And
how did that make you feel?
Just so relieved. It was an incredible weight off. I didn't think that he would respond. You know, I didn't think that he was going to disown me by any means, but I was worried that it would alter our relationship somehow. But
if he threatened to disown you, would that have stopped your marriage?
No, definitely not. You know, I love my dad. I love my family. But I feel like, you know, after a certain point, staying true to who I am and the decisions that I'm making is, you know, bigger and more important than any other relationship that I will ever have. You know, my relationship with myself comes first. And I think that allowing, you know, anybody else's perception of me or their decisions in regards to our relationship, allowing that to throw me off would, you know, be harmful in the long run. It wouldn't be a relationship that I would want to have anyhow, you know. And that's not to discount people who have had to go through that. I can't imagine the pain that would bring. And I think that, you know, I'm grateful that's not an experience that I've had to go through. But yeah, I think that I would have still made the same decisions regardless of anyone's response.
And if your family is listening, the Adams family, mom, dad, siblings, sounds like you did a great job navigating a very complicated space. And I love your dad bringing up Elder Christofferson's book. I'm going to read a quote from that book. And as we know, Tom Christofferson's the younger brother of Elder Christofferson. And this is a quote from Elder Tom Christofferson or other Christofferson's mom. And it's a few years after Brother Christofferson came out to his family and asked, and after he had asked to be excommunicated, his mother explained to his brothers and their wives, quote, "The only thing we can be really perfect at is loving each other. The most important year lesson your children will learn from how our family treats their Uncle Tom is that nothing they can do will ever take them outside of the circle of our family's love." So I love that. You know, the Adams family is practicing that. Yeah. You are within the family circle. You're not within the teachings of our church, mm-hmm. but you're within the family circle.
Yeah.
And I think that that is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I think your parents may wonder, and a lot of LDS parents wonder, what's my responsibility to stand up for my religion? But to me, standing up for our religion is keeping our family together.
Yeah.
Now I joke and say, if you joined ISIS, you know, and wanted to bomb us, but obviously right. you haven't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're a law-abiding citizen contributing to society and just wanting to move forward in your life. And this other quote I love from Elder Christofferson or Tom Christofferson's book is, "Accepting others like you, Jillian, does not mean we condone, agree with, or conform to their beliefs or choices, but simply that we allow the reality of their lives to be different from our own."
Yeah.
So I like that. It creates space for just us to be different.
Right.
And it doesn't mean that I can, you know, that I agree with or conform, but I just allow your life. And it's maybe what Elder Gay said is, you know, I don't know your road. Mm-hmm. And so I love the McIntosh mm-hmm. video on the Mormon and Gay site that I assume you've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And Becky McIntosh mm-hmm. just says, we're leaving this at the Savior's feet.
Yeah.
And so that's what I think LDS families can do, and all of us can do, is we're not going to judge you. We're just going to leave this at the Savior's feet. And the only thing we can really control is love, which is a doctrine.
Right.
So any other kudos you want to give to your family? Did they come to your wedding?
They did. Yes. They came to our wedding, and it was the most perfect thing ever. One of my sisters did our flowers, and the other sister did a beautiful weave for our wedding arch, and everybody pitched in. My sister's in-laws lent me their cabin space up in the mountains for us to be married at.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, it was really amazing the way that, you know.
And Cassidy comes from a very active family. Were they there?
They were. Yeah. Yeah. Both sides of our families were there and very supportive and very active in helping with the planning. You know, her family helped us get the food set up and everything the day of, and everybody was there the night before helping decorate the trees and stuff for the next day. And it was very much a family event, and we both consider ourselves extremely lucky to have such loving, wonderful families who just allow love to be the reigning factor in our relationships.
And I guess you can't speak for either sets of parents, but do you think they felt they were crossing a line in our church to go to your wedding and support it and even help with the flowers? Or do you think they just felt okay and that this is what they should do as parents?
They did it because they felt it was a good thing to do. You know, I don't think that they felt it was, condoning necessarily what was going on there, but to be, you know, just to be our family for that day, you know, and to be there in the love that a family has for their family members. I think that's all that was for them.
Were there grandchildren there?
Yes, there were.
I don't
know
how old the grandchildren are. And
yeah.
If there was concern that teenage grandchildren would be impressed in a negative way about this, or how they navigated any of that?
Well, there weren't any teenage okay. children there, just because
there's no
our siblings are not old enough. Yeah. I had two nieces and a nephew, and they're both, you know, or they're all under the age of five.
So that, yeah.
And Cassidy's nieces and nephews were planning to be there, but it was, kind of a drive up into the canyon. And she just said that with like nap schedules, because she just had a newborn, you know, it would just be too much of a...
Because that's one of the interesting things about Brother Christofferson's mom. Her quote here doesn't necessarily refer to Elder Christofferson and the wives. Mm-hmm. It's more about the impact it'll be on your children.
Right.
And I'll read the quote again. The only thing we can be really perfect at is loving each other. The most and less important lesson your children will learn. She didn't say you.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking to the children, the spouses, your children, meaning her grandchildren, will learn is how our family treats their Uncle Tom. So this is Uncle Tom,
mm-hmm.
is that nothing they can ever do will take them outside of the circle the family's love.
Right.
And so I love that. And the principle that, you know, that's created in both of your families, that they love you.
Yeah.
And I think that creates a culture that, you know, we can talk that my parents, grandparents love me, and whatever road I'm on, they're safe to talk to because they've shown this love to you and your wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think there's principles that happened in your family that brought your family close together in a real and authentic way, even though it's complicated space.
Right.
I don't know if this, did someone walk someone down the aisle? I've never been to a same-sex wedding, to be honest.
We walked each other down the aisle. And I mean, it was outdoors. It was really just like in this, like, you know, forested area. So, you know, the aisle is figurative, of uh-huh. course, but, we walked each other to the altar. So
okay.
we kind of just, you know, decided that we didn't really need to follow convention of father giving daughter to groom or anything like that. So we just, you know, like we were going into it together. And so we wanted to walk into it symbolically that way. Yeah.
Any other thing? We're kind of coming to the end of the podcast. Any other things you'd like to share with our listeners, Jillian?
I don't think so.
Are you happy?
I am happy. Yeah, I think that's.
Do you feel like you're able to accomplish your life goals having a partner in your life?
Yes. I think more so than I ever expected. I think that, you know, there was a lot of loneliness for a few years there, and that has completely gone away. And I think that, you know, I have done it my way. I've done it on the path that I'm on. And there's definitely been some pain and hardship along the way, some self-inflicted and some not. But it's all led me to where I am right now. And I'm incredibly grateful for the journey that I've been on. And I am really grateful to you for letting me, you know, come here and share my story. Because I think it's really important for, you know, us to just start opening a dialogue of, you know, there doesn't have to be animosity and judgment between people who have chosen different paths in their lives. I think it's important to, you know, like you said at the beginning, to not vilify people who are outside of the realm of our understanding, and to just allow things to be as they are, and just allow love to be the one thing that matters the most. I think that is the thing that I've taken away from all my life experiences, is that love is what matters and that everything else is kind of secondary.
Those are really good thoughts, Jillian. And I love what you've done. I think you've been very sensitive to your family in this process. And I love some of the things you've done. So I invite every LGBTQ person, and sometimes you've got a family situation that's different than Jillian's, where there's not as much understanding, but I think it's a two-way street. And I think your parents and your family have learned and grown. And I think you've done a good job of giving them space and trying to just keep the communication channels.
Yeah.
I think if you can find a common family goal, that let's keep the family together, let's keep the communication open, let's keep trust and honesty and try to see the best in each other, and you have that common goal in a family, then you're able to do what your two families are doing. I guess your three families are doing now, your own family as well as both sets of parents. We talked in this podcast before we went live that I think, and I may have mentioned at the beginning, that Jillian stepped away from the church. It sounds like you go to support family events.
I do. Yeah. Went to a niece's baptism in December. I'm always, you know, planning on going to events like that, to priesthood confirmations and baby blessings and the whole nine yards, just because, you know, my family and loved ones have loved and supported me through, you know, my life and the things that happened therein. And I want to do the same for them. You know, it's a two-way street.
grace is a word that's came to my mind as you described what you're doing. And I think there's just grace in that you're doing things and your family's doing things. I don't know if that's an accurate application of the word grace, but it just seems like you're very thoughtful of each other and trying to do the very best.
Yeah.
So thank you, Jillian Adams, for joining us on another episode of Listen and Learn Love and sharing your story. And if these two families are listening, it sounds like you've done a great job in raising wonderful daughters and supporting them and keeping families together.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if this is okay for me to say, but I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram. If anybody ever wants to reach out, ask additional questions,
tell us your Facebook name just and how to spell your first name.
Oh yeah. So my name on Facebook is just Jillian Adams. Might be Jillian Nicole Adams, but I'll probably pop up either way because no one spells my name the way that I spell it. And it's spelled J-I-L-L-Y-A-N. It's a different spelling. So
So you can find Jillian easily. J-I-L-L-Y-A-N Adams.
Yeah. And it's the same Jillian Adams, Jillian.Adams on Instagram, which, you know, I'm on there frequently. So
thanks for joining us, Jillian. You have a great life ahead of you.
Thank you, Richard.
And thanks to our listeners for joining us on another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love.